Picture that.
Go back and dick.
What's this. That? The 62nd episode?
Yeah. 62 coming your way.
Boom. On, wham. Here it is. Hot. Delicious. Hmm. Are we starting this way?
I don't know. Are we?
like sauces.
I was trying to cue off you to see if we had actually started.
What up, world? Ew. Welcome to episode 62.
We made it
almost to 70.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. You know, we have a full house tonight. A lot of people here on the pod. We have up in the mountains from his mountain chalet. What did we call it?
Tower One.
No, the house has a new name. I discussed it with John a couple days ago. Cemetery Hill.
Okay.
Wait.
It's amazing because it's next to a cemetery. It's so literal.
And it's on a hill.
It's like if a forklift were lifting a crate of forks.
And ladies, Fluffy has taken up a recent hobby of romping through the cemeteries late at night with a glass of wine and a cigar.
That sounds totally normal.
The oldest gravestone I've found so far is 1872.
Ooh.
Cool.
Ooh.
Cool.
There's a lot of Andersons in that graveyard too.
Really?
Like
your relations?
I don't know.
I feel like we're getting off. I feel like we're getting off topic.
I have been surprised by my relations though. And so I just assume that I'm related until I know I'm not.
All right, let's move on. My name's Tyler. I'm in Berkeley.
Let's start with the introduction first. Tyler in Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And up in the mountain chalet cemetery hill, Mr. Nels Parrish. Hello.
Hello. Happy to be here again.
And
I feel like almost a regular now.
You are. You're becoming a regular. Yeah, definitely.
What's the number?
Because you contribute down home wisdom.
Yeah,
it's that beard.
I try to contribute. You know.
Oh, you do sometimes.
You do.
Too easy.
Brutal.
And Kelly, how are you doing?
Kel had popcorn, Soul South Studio. Kelly, how are you?
I'm good. I was just trying to be quiet so we could get through the intros.
Who wants to get through the intros, though?
John Anderson.
Hi, everybody.
That lovely voice.
How's it going?
My name's Blake Mannion.
All right. Fearless leader.
Hostess with the mostest.
Yes.
Yo, what are we going to talk about today?
We're going to talk about Woodward and his new book on the Trump administration and his what he saw in the White House. And we're going to talk about the mysterious op-ed. It stands for opinion editorial. That was released in the New York Times.
Twist, it wasn't Mike Pence.
Twist, it wasn't.
He'll take a lie detector. He'll take a lie detector to prove it.
Actually, fun fact, Mike Pence has a lie detector in his bedroom.
What?
No, I'm just kidding. I totally made that up. That's not a fact at all.
You know what's creepy? He calls his wife mother.
I don't believe you.
But no, that's real. That's real.
That's super fucking real. And he won't go to dinner with anybody alone, female, unless it's his wife or his wife is there.
Right, yeah, she has to be present.
Yeah.
So, but what's the difference? I don't know. I've worked in a lot of, especially like kitchens and restaurants where maybe sometimes the women, they would call you Papa, you know? And sometimes people call them Mama. It's just like a name, you know? So what's the difference
between consummate and mother? Blake, you live in such a hipper world than any of us do.
Man, I live in the real world, all right? Down here in the streets. Your shit's real. Because it's the real world.
It's because you're hardcore.
But I'm serious. People, I mean, I've worked in those environments where I get called Papa, and I...
Yeah, but you get called Papa. Your like significant other doesn't do that outside of the bedroom, of course. You know, all right.
You never call your significant other like Mama.
You know, I saw someone say this the other day. They were like, "Daddy has been so sexualized that I'm gonna need to have my kids call me something else."
That's my point. All right. Well, that's not all
we have talked about today. So far fallen in every single rabbit hole.
Well, we're going to start off with the Woodward book. John, you're listening to the book right now, right?
I'm trying to listen to the book right now.
It's going better than this podcast?
Slightly. But I'm only like 20 minutes in because it is... So it's called Fear for everybody out there who hasn't heard of it, which would be astounding. It is really...
Is that a acronym for farted, encrusted, authoritarian ruler?
No, but
dude,
it should be.
Nailed it. Wow.
I find it really aggravating because it's just a series of Trump being proven wrong after he's made wild assertions. And so, for example... there was a meeting with Steve Bannon and some other guy, I forget, but while Trump was trying to figure out if he wanted to run or not. And the guy comes in and he's like, "Well, so here's the thing. Do you remember how many times you voted?" And he's like, "I've voted every time. Every time I could, I voted." And he was like, "Great. So you only voted in one Republican primary your whole life." And he's like, "No, that's a complete lie." And he's like, "So... there's public records of this, and you've only voted in one primary, and it's for Rudy Giuliani." And then he was like, "Oh, yeah, that totally happens." And just, there was no relation to reality or the truth or what he had just previously said. And that is just anecdote after anecdote after anecdote in the book. So I find it... just so grating that I'm having a difficult time listening to it.
Right.
It sounds terrible.
It's awful. It's really a slog.
It sounds like it's poorly written too.
No, it's not. It's actually really interesting as a like artifact. So we should say Woodward has a particular style that he... This is Woodward of Woodward and Bernstein from Nixon. He, I believe, pioneered a type of journalism called deep sourcing. And he's really interesting to listen to him talk about this. It came out of necessity with Watergate and his reporting around Watergate, because he would interview people, he would be talking with people, and they'd be like, "Yo, this and that is going on, blah, blah, blah." He'd be like, "Great, can I turn on my recorder?" And then he would turn on the recorder and he'd get something completely different. Mm-hmm. So what he ended up doing is saying, "I'm not going to name you as a source, but, you know, like, I'm going to build all of this out with supporting documents and multiple interviews, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and then tell it as a narrative." So he says, like, you know, "Then Steve Bannon said this, and then Trump responded with this," with direct quotes. And so there's been some attacking of that. Good luck. He publishes. So there was one extraordinary thing. Trump wanted to pull out of the South Korea free trade agreement, that we have with South Korea. And Gary Cohn, who was his economic advisor, slow walked it for like months. At one point, there was a letter that he was going to sign that was on his desk, Trump's desk. And Cohen just stole it.
Yeah, took it off and walked away with it.
Yeah, and then Trump forgot about it, which is extraordinary in and of itself. But Woodward published the letter. He has the letter.
Right.
And so, yeah. So as far as quibbling with the sourcing and methods of this, I think Woodward is one of the most respected journalists America has ever produced.
Because he's so thorough.
He's incredibly thorough.
Yeah. So
that's cool.
That what you just explained there is why this book has credibility, as opposed to people thinking, "Well, he's just writing all this insane stuff to sell the book for millions of dollars."
Yeah, which is crazy because he has covered every president since Nixon. Yeah. And so I suspect that he's done fine financially. Yeah. He had several prominent books during the Bush or during the Obama administration and the Bush administration. So,
all right, so, so that argument's not even really there.
No, it's not at all. It's a crazy...
I mean, it's there, but he's also built such a strong reputation from all of his past books, especially on everything he's done about our presidents, that they're going to still make the argument, but I don't think it's going to get very far.
You just don't think it doesn't have any validity.
I also love that they're accusing him of doing something for trying to make money and like fucking up people's lives. Like, that's what Trump's entire career has been.
that's what a lot of people's careers are, though.
Yeah. But I think importantly, when you look at this book, if you follow what Trump's campaign was, what his first 2 years basically have been, it's not really that surprising to read the stuff that's in there. It's a cyclical aspect of his behavior to make assertions about stuff that he's confident that he can sell to people. Even if there's public records to dispute it, he'll still stick to his guns about it.
I think it's not surprising, but it's still shocking.
Yeah.
That's been it, like... Yeah, of course these things are happening. We kind of knew these things were happening, but it's still amazing. Like, there's another anecdote where I believe this was before Trump's second attack on Syria and Assad. He called the phone, or he called up Jim Mattis and said, "We're going to fucking kill Assad." Fucking killed a lot of them, was the quote. And then he hangs up the phone, and Mattis looks at his deputy and says, "We're not going to do that." And it's just, that's remarkable. Think about if Barack Obama called up Bob Gates and was like,
"Bill."
Actually, I bet that happened a lot. But the idea that Obama's direct orders weren't followed is just something that would never entered anybody's mind, because Obama had so much legitimacy, and the fact that we're pretty much operating with a dual track federal government right now, where we have Trump on one track and then like the bureaucracy and professionals on another track, is really dangerous. Because let's say North Korea decided to launch an attack on Guam, and then Trump calls up, which is very well within the possibility of things happening. And then Trump calls up Mattis and says, "Nuke all of North Korea." And Mattis says, "No." Mm-hmm. What happens then? Or if Trump calls up, you know, he gives the order and then the order filters back up, and then there's a dispute about what to do. Those things get really bad really, really fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Woodward, I listened to his interview with Rachel Maddow the other night. Mm-hmm. And he was like, "God forbid we have a national emergency."
Yeah. That's the Trump's. We've been going through a series of crises, but except for Puerto Rico, all of them have been self-induced. And so if we have a crisis that is not self-induced, we have very little capacity to deal with it. Like, I'm very concerned about what the response is going to be to Florence.
Yeah.
Especially after we saw that the Trump administration took money out of the preparedness fund for hurricanes and put it into detention centers for ICE, which, you know, Joe Biden says, "Don't tell me what your priorities are. Tell me what your budget is, and I'll tell you what your priorities are." And right now, our priorities are locking people up on the border who are seeking asylum, not saving people from hurricanes.
Do you have a date on when they did that?
I don't. I can look real quick.
I think it was like November or something.
It was right as we were going into hurricane season.
And which senator?
Year, pretty much.
So there was a senator who said that, right? Who
It was Senator Merkley, and Senator, I forget where he's from, somewhere in the east, northeast. And he has been doing a lot of work on family detentions and such. He's pretty good on this issue. He should be applauded.
Yeah, so that would have been this time last year before the hurricane hit Puerto Rico then, right?
No, it was, sorry, it was going into this hurricane season.
All of this, so it was more recent than that.
Yeah, it was like March or something like that.
Yeah.
Before there was an awesome article that came out today. They found like a few million water bottles of clean water somewhere in Puerto Rico that never got distributed.
What? Yep. Yeah, there's up to a million water bottles sitting on a runway in Puerto Rico. And it sounds like they are now too contaminated to use.
Right. Right.
So yeah, we've wasted all that water.
It's really, like, I find that to be one of the most interesting stories in terms of different news media coverage in terms of Puerto Rico. Because what you see real reporting from, you know, the Washington Post, the New York Times, saying that really it's the federal government that messed up handing those out. And then Trump and his people come out and say, it's not us, it's the mayor of, you know, that is in Puerto Rico. They messed it up. We gave it all to them. And so there's clearly a disconnect there. I tend to believe with what I've seen that Trump is lying about it. And they were withholding certain types of much needed stuff for the people of Puerto Rico. And now we're trying to play it off that it wasn't their fault.
Yeah, now we know we have 3,000 deaths.
3,000 deaths. Or so. That's the official count from Puerto Rico now.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is just a really good example of the of why government matters and why we should invest in government, because no corporation, no, the private sector is never going to respond to things like this. And so we need a robust federal government that has leadership from the top.
Right. And cares about providing citizens with basic needs, right? Because, yeah, Coca-Cola will bring a bunch of water bottles down there if they have the money to pay them.
Right.
But that's not what disaster response is about.
No, and no corporation is going to make a profit off of disaster response. And if they do, it's probably pretty evil what they're doing. So right, this is like the very basic reasons why government exists. And then we also have, I think, a systemic problem that starts from the top. And it's not like, it's not only that the problem is they didn't have the resources that they needed, they didn't have the attention that they needed. The thing that the president can do is get on the phone to like some local authority and be like, hi, this is the president of the United States, get your fucking shit together. And that matters a lot in terms of these things. Obviously, when you have 3,000 deaths, everybody fucked up.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more logistics than just that. You know, like maybe they need money or some kind of equipment or something like that. You know?
Well, and also like...
But yeah, that's the basics, I get.
And Puerto Rico was in trouble prior to this hurricane, but that is not an argument against them. It's an argument to further invest in that
island. I agree. And what you hope that it's just incompetencies by Trump and not some of the more extreme views by people that say that he completely ignored Puerto Rico because of
Kelly, I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time that hearing south.
I'll repeat what I said, I guess. Basically, what I was saying is that I hope that it's just his incompetencies and it's not his pettiness about land deals that went south and the Trump International hotels that happened down there and along the sand, not the sand, but his golf courses that he was trying to install there, basically five years ago. And when they got stalled, he had basically a falling out with people that are in the Puerto Rican government. And so what you hope that it's just incompetencies, not straight up pettiness. But right, given his right track record, it probably is pettiness.
Yeah.
Yeah. It could also be a some sort of like, I don't want to call it racism, but like, I would be surprised if he knew that Puerto Rico was part of America prior to the hurricane. And right, so I think it's like more the attention.
Yeah.
More than anything else, you know, like he just wasn't able to give the attention that was needed to something like this because he didn't know that it was his responsibility. I think that's the most, that's a charitable interpretation of what happened. That doesn't take him off the hook, though.
That is incompetent.
It's just, it's, we need a president who understands that Puerto Rico is a territory.
Well, and I wonder how many people tried to talk to him at, you know, the White House or in between meetings or wherever, like, hey, let's talk about Puerto Rico. And he'd be like, no. I don't have time for that. Well, I wonder how many people actually tried to talk to him about it.
I don't know. That's one of the interesting things in the Woodward book, is that it seems like he just has no real managerial or executive ability because he keeps on saying, well, this should happen. And then his aides bury it and he forgets about it.
Yeah.
And that's like not good for your, you know, local store owner.
Yeah, especially someone that campaigned on being the best executive that ever lived.
That there were a couple things that really, just in terms of like hypocrisy, that really made me upset. That was one of them. Another one was drain the swamp. I was like, Trump is the swampiest swamp person there is. It's going to get so much worse with him in there.
He's like the swamp prince.
He is. He's the original swamp monster. Hashtag emoluments.
He's not like, the original. He's like the up and coming, like, well, swamp king.
You know, in business, there's a marketing theory and strategy. Maybe he subscribes to this, that you market your worst quality. Whatever your worst quality is, you market it so that then if people buy into, so basically you take whatever it is and you're like, so he's a horrible manager, a horrible executive. You market you're a great executive, a great manager. And that's basically where you set the bar. So if you convince everybody of that, then they're not going to be pissed off about all the other things that you're doing wrong, because like it, in relation to the shittiest thing, it's not as bad.
I think you just described the reason why people like Trump.
It's all about expectations.
Yeah, and perceptions.
I don't know if I agree with it, Tyler. I think that's a bunch of bullshit.
I mean,
but
yeah.
Whatever.
So it's something I think combined with this New York Times op-ed, so we should explain that. There was an op-ed that came out right after the news broke about the Woodward book that was written anonymously, and it claimed to be from a senior Trump administration official, so we don't know exactly what that means, but it claimed that there is a group of people in the administration acting as guardrails on Trump. So that I found to be remarkable, and that goes back to this dual-track presidency thing, right? Which is bananas.
Which is scary. He can't keep his own house in order.
It's wicked scary, right, Fluffy?
Yeah, I mean, to think that, and like the scariest thing to me is I don't necessarily think it's the wrong thing for them to be doing, right? Like, in theory, they're probably keeping us safer by stealing things off his desk, which is insane.
I have a question for you guys. Do you think that New York Times op-ed was courageous?
No, I thought it was actually really stupid. And I thought that it was probably from people who, like, people who are doing an act of patriotism like that. That's just something you don't talk about until after it's done, you know? It's like you don't tell the world that you have got this secret society of people who are trying to keep you safe. It just sounds kind of arrogant. I wouldn't be surprised if it was more than one person and they were all conservatives, but it seemed kind of arrogant. I thought it was stupid, you know?
Yeah, you don't publish a thing saying, how do you think Skull and Bones has lasted this long?
I think Blake touches on something important that I thought initially, which was that I agree, if they are trying to keep us safe, right, and they're trying to stop Trump from making serious errors, you don't publish that so you can continue to be effective at that. What you're doing effectively now is calling out how bad he is at figuring his own house out, bringing more discord within and making him less likely to trust his aides, meaning that if some of those people who are well-meaning and trying to do it may not have the opportunity to stop something in the future. What I thought when I initially saw it was, it sounds like a bunch of people who are going to try to save their careers when Trump's out of the White House by basically saying, well, we were still thinking positively. We were still doing the right thing, even though he was our boss. You know, trying to save their skin when shit starts to hit the fan, either with this upcoming election or the presidential election in 2 years, they'll step back and go, we can still be trusted people in the federal government. We can still be part of a Republican White House. That was my initial thought.
That's interesting. I did not think about that.
I didn't know we were talking about initial thoughts. I have one that I want to throw in there, but we'll come back to that. Fluffy, go ahead.
No. Go for it. I didn't really have anything else. I had not thought about what Kelly had said like that. I hadn't had that thought about it, so I just thought that was interesting.
So, I mean, what I first thought when I saw that was that it wasn't really any senior official. I thought that that was just somebody being wise, trying to alienate Trump and stir the pot.
Like somebody not in the administration?
Yeah.
The New York Times wouldn't have published it unless it
was. Well, and that's the other, that's the reason, that's the only reason why I disagree with what I'm saying. But it does feel like an attempt. It does feel like an attempt to alienate him and make him feel alone.
I saw this great meme. It was one of those memes with Barack and Biden laughing to each other, and it's Biden, and he goes, "So I wrote this op-ed."
That's my point. Yeah, totally. Like,
yeah,
somebody, and even if it is just one random rogue, somebody who's saying probably a. Private, like a somebody within security, national security,
Or yeah, or so like DOJ. NSA.
Yeah, and that's pretty believable. But I mean,
Jeff Sessions.
I feel like it was kind of
he's too much of a dumb Southerner.
I don't know.
Quote: like,
why? It's kind of the reason why you would write something like that. Is beyond me. There's so many answers.
Let's examine that. Why would you write this? What is your goal to this? Right. So we've got cover your own ass.
Yeah, cover your own ass.
Makes a lot Kelly, of sense. I think that's a good one.
What else? Tyler.
I think that honestly, like, well, we talked about like I think one of the things could be, especially in it being in relation to when the Woodward book was like around the same time the Woodward book was published. It could be that they basically want to like assuage people's fears. Like, there's a lot of people who are becoming politically active over this who haven't been in the past, and they just want to be like, "Oh no, like don't worry, like there are people within the government who are taking care of this."
Yeah, but that's really
interesting too.
But then I think it was Rachel Maddow that brought this point up too, or it was Morning Joe on MSNBC. But they were saying that you're not doing enough. You can't like let the other 90% go, and because you're saving.
And Barack Obama said that in his speech.
Or maybe that was what Obama said.
Yeah, Obama said you're not helping if you're letting the 90% of the crazy shit that's going on in this administration go through, and then stopping the 10%.
Right.
There's still 90% of crazy shit happening. Now, another interesting thing: Paul Ryan gave an interview to Mark Leibovich, I think, recently, and he said something along the lines of like. I forget exactly what the question was. It might have been like, why are you not being more active in opposing Trump? And he said something like, you know, I'll be able to retire and say, well, I stopped this crisis and I stopped this crisis and I stopped this crisis. And it's like, well, what are those crises? Like, maybe you should be telling the American public as one of their chief representatives what's happening right now. And it, you know, I think something that would have been a lot more powerful for this op-ed writer would have been hand in your resignation, put in this op-ed, and then go up to the fucking Hill and demand a hearing and say, I want to have a televised hearing to explain to you all the crazy shit that's going on. Now, go ahead.
Yeah, but before you keep going, because that could be another reason why somebody would have written it. But they would have been much more public about it, like you said.
I love the idea that Tyler brought up as well, because if you're looking at the upcoming elections and you're trying to stop people's fears that are independents or some of the Republicans that are slipping in Trump's most recent popularity polls and approval polls, that's all you need is to get another 5-10% back of those categories, yeah. And you end up winning a lot of House seats.
I think that
this would explain why it was published to the New York Times.
I do think that it was fairly foreseeable that this was going to cause more chaos than it was going to prevent. And so I don't think it's a, like, let's calm everybody down move.
No.
I don't.
I think this is a way of absolutely accelerating the whole process.
The process of what?
Of impeaching Trump.
Yeah. Well, okay, so
that was my initial thought, that this was a sign of a more serious and impending impeachment of Trump.
I think it's a sign of a more serious and impending impeachment of Trump, and it's a cover your own ass move. I don't think it's let's accelerate that process. I think it is, I see this process coming at me like a freight train, and I want to get ahead of it a little bit. And I think that because there was, in the op-ed, they talk about, there was early talk about invoking the 25th Amendment, but they were worried that that was going to start a constitutional crisis. And when you have unelected, anonymous government officials stopping the duly elected president, I think that that is already a constitutional crisis.
Agreed. It shouldn't happen, but he can't run his house well enough to stop it from happening because right. He goes off the rails. He's erratic.
And the other thing is that the 25th Amendment is the 25th Amendment to the Constitution. And so you're obviously, if you invoke the 25th Amendment, you're working within the Constitution. So I don't buy their argument there.
Did you guys notice that Omarosa has been talking about how her and those Trump officials, senior officials, were talking about the 25th?
No, I didn't.
So she is so arrogant, first of all. She's like super full of herself. If you watch her interviews.
Oh, really? Somebody who was on The Apprentice?
Yes.
Multiple times?
Right? Like, weird. Didn't she, like, win or something? She talks about how they had discussions about invoking the 25th Amendment, and it makes me wonder, I need to see if she brought this up before this op-ed was released, but I wonder if this person knows her or is kind of in cahoots with her in some ways.
She doesn't strike me as somebody you're in cahoots with.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure she's got a senior official friend, though. It's just like an arrogant thing to do. You know, like, why would nobody's gonna like applaud you right now? Right now, people are kind of like upset with you for doing this too.
So, who do we think it is then?
I said earlier, I think it is a group, like more than one person, and I think you said that as well.
Yeah. I threw out Jeff Sessions as a joke, but I really don't think it's him either. I would fall more towards a group of people, and I don't know if it's necessarily high-level advisors either. I think it could very easily be aides to some cabinet members that threw something together like that. It's obviously hard to tell.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think a group's probably more likely.
Yes, yeah, somebody in the NSA or some division of security.
Probably, it's likely, considering the text of it, a national security person or a DOJ type official. But I think it is, I think it is multiple people. I think that there haven't been a lot of officials who have shown public courage out of this administration. And so I think if somebody had shown that public courage, it would be more likely that there was a single person, but there's safety in numbers. And so that's why I think that this is multiple people.
And it's really interesting because what you see is people who have disagreed with Trump within
his cabinet within the White House have ended up just quitting. And that's their biggest thing of defiance is like, I'm going to go back to the private sector and go back to work someplace else because he's an asshole, which doesn't help anything. So you look at this op-ed and you go, well, I guess it's okay that people are hanging in there and trying to get it right, you know, but I would have liked to have seen what you said earlier. But they go to the Hill, they come out, they resign, they say, I have all this information. You as congressmen need to know this because it's your job to check his power through impeachment proceedings, through hearings into how he runs his house. And if somebody would have done that, that's so much more courageous than hiding behind a group in an op-ed.
The only argument I can think of against coming out publicly that I find compelling is that if you come out publicly, it's going to be about you and it's not going to be about the content of what you wrote. And so as soon as you come out, it's going to be, this is ex official. They went, you know, here's every speech they ever did. We're going to start looking into their background. It's going to be a whole campaign against them. And then you give Trump a foil to stand against.
It doesn't even matter, though. Here's the thing is, why would you come out anyways like this, just impeach him? You know, you can't come out with an article like that.
Well, they can impeach him because they're part of the federal government, or they're part of the executive.
But you can't, but it's pointless to come out with an article like that if you're going to do it as a person and you don't have, like, any guns or any agenda moving forward. You know what I'm saying?
I'm not sure I do.
So there's, well, it would be pointless.
Blake, I think I see what you're saying. But I think, so the point is, if somebody has written this and has let it sit out there so that people read it for what it says, and then later comes out and, like you said, John, charges up to the Capitol, resigns, charges up to the Capitol, and does all that to try to, so, I mean, that more courageous thing that we've been talking about is still possible. Right?
That's true. This could be a multi-step process.
Mm-hmm. That's a good
Absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely.
It could also be a trial balloon to see how the public would react to something like the 25th Amendment.
Right. Good point also.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, maybe that's the real end game.
It could be. That's, I think now, considering the timing, we're not going to impeach Trump before election 2020 season hits.
No.
And it might be a tough slog to get through in terms of the election. It'll be galvanizing for the Republicans, so maybe we don't want to go there. But the 25th Amendment could be swift. And so if we can do something like the Democrats win overwhelmingly, and then the cabinet comes out and says, we want to do the 25th Amendment, and I think that there is a component of congressional. I think once the cabinet invokes the 25th Amendment, it goes to Congress. And so they might be waiting for Congress. And I also want to say,
both houses have to agree on it.
So the way I don't know exactly.
I think that's what I read or heard.
I'm not positive about that. And another thing I want to put a whole big caveat on this is that there's going to be lots of interesting histories that come out of this time. And it could be that, you know, every day we sit on Donald Trump to prevent him from launching nuclear weapons. And that's why we stayed. In that case,
totally.
Okay,
right.
Cool. Like, I understand why you stayed. But, and so I just want to put that caveat on there is that we don't know the crazy shit. And it is possible that they're stopping it. Although, as I sit right now, I think that it would be way more powerful if they made this all public. And they told us about the crazy shit, too.
Well, at the same time, though, I guess then in that case, like, if you do make it public who you are, when you are the person that's stopping a nuclear attack from happening, it's probably best that you don't tell anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, that's also true, is that you should just keep your fucking mouth
shut. Yeah, because then Trump locks you up and then he drops the nuke the next day. And he's like, that's why the nukes weren't dropped. Like, oh, okay.
So,
that motherfucker.
So I have kept something. Telling me it took...
the button just broke.
So I worked with an individual who was in the Navy for a while, and he was strangely fascinated with, like, the abandoned missile silos that are here in Colorado. And he was talking to me about, they do military drills of nuclear launches, right? And he said, I can't remember the exact percentage, but he said that there was a percentage of the time, and it was a significant, I want to say it was like 30-some percent, 33%, whatever, of the time that the person who was given the order to launch the nuke, the person who actually had to physically push the button, you know, in the silo, whatever, bunker, didn't do it.
What and percentage that person, of time?
And that, it, I... Mm, I'm going to struggle with this one. I think it was in the ballpark of like 30-some percent. But I think that this is interesting to know that this goes all the way down the chain. This is not just, you know, there are high officials who may be taking things off his desk who are stopping nuclear attacks every day. But I do think that this also goes down every level. And those people are replaced, ultimately, obviously, after that drill is run with somebody who they believe would actually do it.
Right.
But that's the thing that happens.
That, I think, is the nightmare scenario, is that we are all just so we basically blunder our way into a war. And there was a quote. So Trump wanted to pull out of the South Korea. This I was in the Woodward book. Wanted to pull out of South Korean trade. And Mattis said, look, this is some of the best defense money we spend. We can detect a nuclear launch from 7 seconds away from South Korea. And if we have our sensors there, and if we ruin our relationship with South Korea, we'll have to put that in Alaska and it'll take 15 minutes. And that's a huge, huge difference. And Trump kept being like, blah, 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 I'm a moron. And then finally Mattis was like, you know why we're doing this? We're doing this to prevent World War III.
Right.
Straight up. And you shouldn't have to tell the President of the United States that that's what we're doing, because even George Bush understood that intuitively. So,
yeah.
25th Amendment.
This was our fear. This was like the everything
have you that guys, we were concerned about. Have you guys explained what the 25th Amendment is? Or have you just been...
Yeah.
It's, on other pods, we have talked about it at length.
I'm just curious, because I'll be honest, I had to just look it up.
Kelly, can you give us a little synopsis?
The 25th Amendment basically states the succession from the presidency. Who comes up next, given a certain circumstances of the president dies or leaves office.
Or is unable to...
It also lays out how that can happen.
Yeah.
If he can send a written note to the Speaker of the House and the President Pro Tem and say, I'm unfit to be in office, then he steps down immediately as soon as that letter gets there, and the vice president assumes roles of the presidency immediately. If it happens that it's within his cabinet and they send a majority of the senior officials, they have to send the same letter saying that he's unable to serve the duties to the same people in Congress. Mm-hmm. The vice president immediately assumes it as soon as they put that letter in. The president is then allowed to rebuttal it and say, no, I am capable of doing this, sending another letter back to Congress, thus assuming his power back. And then after that, if the same majority of people within his cabinet send another letter, then Congress has to actually approve him being removed from office.
So maybe the constitutional crisis they're talking about is that series of things happening and then eventually going to Congress and then Congress trying to figure out what to do, and that is the constitutional crisis.
I think that that's what you're getting to.
Yeah.
Because obviously if Trump's cabinet came out and said, we don't think he's fit to serve, he would immediately send a letter and say, I absolutely am, fire them all as his cabinet and bring a bunch of people in that would agree with him.
Yep. And if it's not unanimous, then there's wiggle room and Congress isn't going to do anything.
No.
Yeah. No. So invoking even the 25th Amendment at this point, the way that the House and the Senate is set up is not going to do anything.
Shoot yourself in the foot.
You're basically like exposing all of the resistance for no reason.
Right. Right. So going back to the op-ed, it probably is a long-term play. Right.
Yeah.
Then to use the 25th Amendment if Democrats take over the House.
This is just a bonkers situation. Like, I cannot believe that we're here
talking about this shit right now? Yeah. Or no?
I think the election is going to be very telling. So, dear listeners, you're just going to have to wait and be patient.
And
it's just like your birthday. You have to eat your cake before you can open your presents.
Is that a punishment?
And you're going to hear you're going to hear almost every election that this is the most important election you'll ever vote in. This time it's true. Because wow. If the Republicans retain both houses of Congress, shit is going to happen really fast. And it's going to be a lot of bad shit. It's going to be things like the libel laws get changed. And it's going to make – and voting rights yep. are restricted. And
then segregation's going to come back.
Yeah, it's like we're going to be a British colony again. Just kidding.
Yeah.
Banning free press stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so it's going
government to – government officials packaged up, shipped to Russia.
Right. And so it's going to set up a very, very difficult environment for the Democrats to win in 2020.
Definitely.
And so we have to win this. We have to win this. Yeah. Now, 538 says, as of today, their like middle of the road model has it is an 80% chance that the Democrats will take back Congress. However, that's pretty close to what the odds were for Trump to become president. So
to not become president.
To not become president. Yeah, he had a 20% chance to be president. So that doesn't mean all the time. That means 1/5 of the time that thing happens, which is actually a lot when you're talking about like catastrophic republic ending events.
Right. It all sounds good until the Russians hack all of their shit.
Well, that is one of my nightmare. One of the reasons why we have to win unequivocally, it has to be a huge win for the Democrats, is because I think one of the things that's going to happen is the Republicans are going to interfere in this election to the point where Trump might be able to claim the election is not legitimate.
Yeah, and that's my biggest fear.
Me too. And if the Democrats win the House by two seats, that could matter a lot. If the Democrats win by 40 seats, then that argument is going to be a lot more challenging for Trump. So we have to win by a shit ton because Trump is not going to view this election as legitimate.
No.
Anything he doesn't win, he doesn't.
No, he's going to be a big baby about it. Now that he's at the top of that position, he is not going to let that go. That's the scariest
part. Well, and his base and his supporters don't care.
They're for it.
Well, and that's the scariest part is that they're looking into enacting certain types of voter suppression laws and certain, libel laws, all this stuff. And what's happening is that you're going to see long-term effects that affect both parties negatively. It's when you start taking away rights from one side because you believe that they're doing something wrong, it's going to come back and bite you in the ass too, because you're taking your rights away too.
Well, I hope so.
And the story of America, through its inception, we're not perfect. All men created equal meant all white men with property
right.
when it was written. Mm-hmm. But we have, through things like the 14th Amendment and the 15th Amendment, things like the 19th Amendment, things like the Voting Rights Act, we have expanded rights in this country. That's what the story of America is supposed to be about. And if we don't win the next coming elections, that story is going to be reversed. And we're going to lose something essential about who we are. And so get out to vote, go knock on doors, call your crazy uncle. Do whatever you have to do to make sure that the Democrats win in 2018 so that we can check this president.
We should we should make an effort to put together some good resources.
Good voting guides. Crooked Media has a whole series of those things.
Podcast?
Crooked Media is the media company that includes Pod Save the World, Pod Save America, et cetera, et cetera. It's the Obama podcast guys. They have a whole bunch of resources that they're rolling out. So we will promote those later. Also, there's organizations like Swing Left that are really useful. And so we should we'll promote those as well so that people can get involved.
Yeah, hear that. We'll keep you updated. All right, gentlemen, anything else you want to add before we kill this?
America.
Thanks for listening. Rate our podcast. Leave us comments.
Oh, freedom. Thank you to
Cian.
Let me pull it up. Hold on.
Oh, you can't get his name wrong.
No, yeah.
I'm not gonna be able to pronounce it. It's
their name wrong. We don't even.
Cian.
Y'all are assuming all that shit.
Dunleavy.
Oh man, that was
Sean Dunleavy.
Dunleavy.
Did you say Dunleavy. That as like terribly
Sean,
as you could?
Sean Dunleavy.
Yes,
I think it's Sean Dunleavy.
Oh, is it? Okay.
I think that's Irish for Sean.
So we would like to give Sean a huge shout out to Irish Sean.
I think. My Irish heritage isn't.
It's spelled C-I-A-N. So, like, what the
Thanks
hell?
Thanks for the good review.
Yeah, they said absolutely floored. I'll never listen to Dan Carlin again. I just want to say you should do both because Dan Carlin is awesome and he's one of the people who got me into podcasting.
John Zero, Dan Carlin.
And if you weren't just joking, let us know. We're
genuinely interested to know if you're trolling us or not. We don't think so because the 5 stars, but you know, it is in question. So Blake's giving me the wrap up. Godspeed, everybody. Rate our podcast. We love you. Mwah.
Shut up.
God, you just be quiet already.